This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry, and thanks so much for listening or calling.
Hello, everyone. I'm from your telephone company, and the message that we have for you is that we are changing your telephone service over to Dial.
Wow, the age of dial telephones. That'll be great when we can just dial a phone call. Think how easy life will be then.
You may have noticed that lots of work has been going on. This is an investment in the future of your community.
In a moment, how the old telephone company of the 19th and 20th centuries is like and not alike the tech giants of today. The telephone monopoly was spectacularly reliable, but its overwhelming power made everyone a little nervous. Are the tech giants of today just friendly competitors with an enlightened sense of customer service, or are they the same scary communications monoliths of old? Also, technology and trust in a few other dimensions. Will commercial pilots trust the remote-controlled drones they will soon be sharing the airspace with? Can safety standards allow us to trust the viability of nuclear power in the United States? And what happens when the first language you learn is a programming language? That's a possible reality for a generation just around the corner. But first, this is worth remembering. We take you back to 1984.
AT&T is no newcomer to computers. Although AT&T previously was barred from selling computers in the open marketplace, its research and development arm, AT&T Bell Laboratories, has always been at the leading edge of computer technology.
Bell Labs, working with a few folks in the U.S. government. The development of the entire electronic computer industry was a government venture from the beginning, working with the telephone monopoly of the time. It was all bound up in the needs of the Defense Department for accurate calculation of bomb sighting, missile and artillery firing during World War II, and the needs of mass communication switching networks to accurately route calls. So when the National Security Agency compels tech companies to hand over their data, as we learned in the dramatic Snowden revelations last year, that happens routinely. The NSA is just doing what the government has done since the dawn of modern telephony. It's the Googles and Facebooks of the world, perhaps, who have had to adjust to this new old reality. And it's been a tough few years. Stephen Levy's new piece for Wired is called How the NSA Almost Killed the Internet. And he joins us now. Stephen Levy, welcome to The Takeaway.
Always a pleasure, John.
So what's going on here? Are Google and the companies that you spoke with for your piece naive or heroic in their response to the government's attempts to basically control the flow of information?
Well, they're neither. I mean, like AT&T, they're public companies, they're profit-making companies. They profess to be a little more idealistic. I think maybe you can make a case for that. But ultimately, their case to the consumer is one that's built and dependent on a degree of trust that I don't think is part of the equation with the telcos.
You know, it's interesting. Looking back at the old AT&T propaganda films and their commercials, their monopoly status was really what and they're really touting their cooperation with the government was exactly what made them so suspect in popular culture back in the day. How have the Googles and Facebooks really managed on some level to avoid this?
Well, so far they have, you know, because, you know, they started out as these scrappy newcomers. I don't think it's in anyone's memory, even in your grandparents' memory, when AT&T might have been a scrappy newcomer there. Even the oldest among us was brought up in an era of Ma Bell. And, you know, and now people are faced with companies like AT&T and Verizon and the other big telecom that, you know, aren't single monopolies, but part of a duopoly of very few companies which handle all our phone calls, both, you know, landline and wireless. And to this day, they have a very deep relationship with the government, and government regulation is really, you know, at the top of their priority list. Customer service, as anyone can tell you, is somewhere behind. And, you know, when they, you know, move off the ball and, you know, and give you some sort of concession saying, you know, you can get out of this contract that you must have there, it's usually because someone else is demanding it, or, you know, one of their, you know, junior partners like T-Mobile comes out and, you know, throws a challenge and saying, we're going to liberate you from this. Whereas on the other hand, a company like Facebook really tries to lure us into the comfort of sharing things we wouldn't do otherwise there. And if we don't trust them, if we feel that it's going directly into the hands of a spy agency, we might be less eager to do our sharing and share and store our information in their cloud and, you know, in the clouds of other places. And that's a big threat to them.
Do you think 2014 has really inaugurated a really significant tension here where the government seems to want to go back to the old days of the AT&T of the 1950s, post-World War II, and these internet companies are really pushing for something fundamentally different in opposition to the government? And how close did they come to really being swallowed up by this old 1950s mentality?
Well, I think in a way you understate it by putting in the 1950s. The 1950s, you know, we had our phone calls. But even so, if some of us, you know, can vaguely remember, I do, when your dad would travel and make a long distance call, a lot of times he wouldn't even make the call. He would just, you know, put in place a collect call that you'd refuse to let him know he was there. We didn't even use our phones so much. But now, not only are voice calls virtually free, but we share so many more things. In our era here in the 21st century, it's not just phone calls, it's everything. And the government, it finds this irresistible. You know, it's inevitable that the government would want to make use of these communications, whether it's phone or whether it's sharing on Facebook or your selfie or, you know, the data you store in a cloud-based storage company. They want to be able to use that information, they say, when it's necessary. But as we've learned, sometimes, you know, it's shocking to hear the scope of what they collect.
And I guess the question really is, do the companies understand how new this dynamic is, that we're not simply talking about individual conversations, we're talking about data that's, you know, three and four dimensions rich in terms of what it tells us?
Right. And that's, you know, to specify, that's in the phone company that they go on these, you know, hops from, you know, who you call and who they call, et cetera. And I think they understand that. And I think that's why at this point now, even the telcos realize that they have a perception problem and they're trying to be a little more open. The first time the telcos are going to deliver what they call transparency reports. The internet companies, on the other hand, they really know this. They really know that, you know, it's a threat to them, particularly on their many, many overseas customers who feel, why should I share something, you know, with you folks when the United States government's listening into me, a foreign government?
Is there a possibility of sort of characterizing this in a sort of tortoise versus the hare, or, you know, some kind of a road race? I mean, are the companies ahead of the government in terms of maintaining and establishing privacy as an ethic or as a brand? And is the government going to catch up, inevitably will catch up, that there's no way that this trust can be maintained in the 21st century?
Well, the Snowden thing was a big reset there. And the companies learned that the government was far ahead of them in harvesting their information there. We first heard about this plan called PRISM, where the government, you know, was able to ask them for a lot of information and force them to provide information. But then we learned about this thing called Muscular, where, you know, the government was basically tunneling into data traffic, you know, that went between the data centers of companies like Google and Yahoo. And they said it was legal because they did this overseas. But of course, all kinds of information about Americans, you know, travels through the data center networks there. And then there's a question of, you know, what right does the U.S. have to get all of Google's information on foreign customers there? And that woke the companies up. And then they said, we have to step up our security. And the one striking thing that I found in doing this story was how much the security people at these companies now consider the United States government their main adversary.
You wrote a book called, in 2001, Crypto, How the Code Rebels Beat the Government, Saving Privacy in the Digital Age. Sounds like that's at least worth an update. And if we're in OT here, has the government pulled off a field goal in the final moments?
I think a field goal is maybe a good way to put it there. One thing that we have found and looking into this, that even though, you know, the NSA is very good at cracking codes, they can't beat all cryptography and all encryption there. You know, if encryption is done right, it really puts a huge roadblock to especially collection of mass data if it's all encrypted there. And maybe that's a good balance to force the government to, you know, have to spend a lot of computation and energy to crack the targets rather than to quickly unlock with some sort of master key a whole lot of information there. So I think maybe I have to tweak that subtitle, but the general sentiment still holds.
Stephen Levy is a senior staff writer for Wired. His latest piece is called How the NSA Almost Killed the Internet. Stephen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
So we've asked you this on many occasions, and there's no way scientifically to really take the pulse of Americans on their trust of technology. Certainly the success of the tech giants suggests that someone trusts them.
This is Tasha from Green Acres, Florida. I have not changed my online habits at all. I never really had any privacy concerns in the first place because I've never done anything I wasn't supposed to do, and I certainly don't have any privacy concerns now.
But a few skeptics now from Memphis, Tennessee. I don't trust Facebook is private. I think they can use it to see us. We are living in the Matrix era.
Hey, this is Eric Mintz from Dallas, Texas. Learning that Big Brother is lying to me is about as surprising as finding out that children sometimes cheat on exams. If and when my online world clashes with my real one, then I will deal with it through the necessary legal channels.
Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE and be part of the conversation. Find us at facebook.com/thetakeaway if you dare.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.